And someone's actually calling me. One moment, I'm going to take this call in case it's a PSC member.
Okay.
Good evening, everybody.
Yep. Good evening. Thank you all that are joining us. We will begin shortly. This should be fun. It's gonna be a fun evening. I'm gonna claim it for everybody.
Right.
While we're waiting for folks.
Well, we're just waiting a couple more minutes for our quorum to show up.
Yeah, I don't see any in our
Jorge just joined.
I do see Bill in the agenda.
Bill just joined too.
Yeah.
Perfect. So that would be 1, 2, 3. That would take us to 5. And we lost Bill.
Dang. That's all you can say.
We were so close.
We were so close. We were there.
Okay,
we were there.
Okay. We need the internet to work for all the.
Again, thank you for all that are joining us. We will begin shortly as we are waiting on our final member to ensure we have quorum. And I see that he's back in our attendee list.
I will promote him.
Thank you. I apologize. I'm not technically savvy on this. Okay.
Okay, Bill.
All right. Hey, Bill.
You made it back. That's all that matters.
Hey. Okay, so
for a minute.
We will kick this meeting off at 6:09. We'll call this meeting to order. Thank you all for attending the Oakland Fund for Children and Youth Planning and Oversight Committee meeting. So we will start this meeting off with a roll call. And at this time, once I do the roll call, this will also give space, Avi, for you to introduce yourself as well. So to begin with roll call, we'll start with Bill Riley.
Present.
Jorge Velasco.
Present. Thank you.
Hakolia Manigo.
Present.
Tassian Formuleli. Present. And then I would like to introduce our newest member, our newest committee member, Avi Rose. And if you can also, you know, introduce yourself, tell us the district you're representing, and just a little bit about you, that would be great.
Sure. Good to be here, y'all. Yeah, my name's Avi Rose. I live in Oakland. I was appointed by Dan Kalb. I live in Glenview. I've lived in the East Bay on and off my whole adult life, but I've lived in Oakland for the last 30 years. I know about OFCY mostly because I recently retired from being executive director of Jewish Family and Community Services East Bay, which is a longtime grantee of OFCY doing early childhood mental health work. So I know it from that perspective. And I'm also a dad who's raised two kids in Oakland. I have two kids who are 20 and almost 19. Multiracial kids, one of whom is transgender, and have just had a whole range of experiences in Oakland with schools and health and mental health and sports and just everything. So I guess I bring that perspective as well. And I think that's about it. yeah, just really glad to be here.
Awesome. Thank you. And we're so happy to have you. So we will move forward with the review of the agenda. As you guys can see, we have three action items that will be taken up as well. And then, so yeah, that's the agenda. It's on your screen. And now we will move forward to open forum. So at this time, if you're on via Zoom, you're prompted to please raise your hand, to press the raise your hand button, and we will call on the speak for you to speak. If you're on by phone, please press star 9 to request to speak, and we will we will elevate you to speak at that time. So it's open forum. So please raise your hand or press star 9 if you would like to make a comment. I see we have two hands. So I will start with Mr. David Hunt from Prescott Circus.
Hi, good evening. I'm just doing a mic check. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Oh, great. Well, good evening. My name is David Hunt. I'm the executive and artistic director with Prescott Circus Theater. We've been a long time grantee supported by OFCY for our summer program, which serves an average of 28 children every summer. And the children themselves go on to serve the community through sharing their talents and performances and workshops. And I just want to thank the committee and just publicly thank OFCY for the support. And especially last year, our return to in-person programming, which was just like a phoenix of coming back and reuniting our children in real time. And they went on to perform a beautiful show at Jeffremery Park in July. And it was just the moral support and moral and spiritual boost for our organization and our small arts community as an agency to get back into our work with our schools, bring our artists together. So thank you for the trust in particular that you all gave the organizations this past 2 years through COVID. And I also want to acknowledge the funding that you all provide our partners in the lead agencies through the school programming and the after-school lead agencies that bring in the arts to the schools. And highlight that right now the staffing is so challenged that ourselves and other agencies, other community-based organizations are playing such a critical role for our children to help offset the staffing challenges. So just thank you for, and I want to highlight, so you all know the role that community-based organizations are playing that are funded by the city in partnership with the lead agencies. So thank you, just thank you for your service. And we're really, excited and proud to be a part of our colleagues as well as part of the city, part of the city docket of grantees. So thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Hunt. And now I believe the next person was Ms. Asada Olubala. This is 2 minutes, please.
It's challenging right now because there's a special school board meeting going on, and it's unfortunately, it looks like we're going to be closing schools next year. My issue for being here is to bring up the fact that African-American children are not getting equity, justice around anything that's going on around education or programming. And I just have to be in the room to make sure, are you treating these African-American children fairly? Are they getting a chance? And the fact that in the school district, disproportionately suspensions are high among African-Americans, disproportionately dropouts, graduation rates, all of that. And then when you go to the board and say Black children need help, they say you got to form a task force. And then if you need money for anything, you have to find the funds. And it's just absurd. So I'm sitting in the room tonight, waiting to see what's going to be said and about African-American children. And just a couple of years ago, I remember when you came up with your strategic plan, you completely dropped focusing on Black boys. And in place of it, you put interest in unaccompanied minors and immigrants. I'm just so appalled that I have to sit in the room to make sure that Black kids get an equitable chance to be served and to get the resources. And I'm tired of it. But I'll pay attention to everything that's going on and make comments as needed.
Thank you so much for your comments, Ms. Olubala. Yes, and I do believe, just based on the plan that has been put in place, that there's a priority on children, especially Black African-American children, has been mentioned in our new upcoming strategic plan. So now we'll move on to item number 3, which is adoption of the OFCY Continuing Resolution 1 to continue conducting POC meetings by teleconference through the COVID-19.
Do we need to adopt the agenda before we move that item?
I don't believe the agenda is ever adopted. I just
don't know need to adopt the agenda.
Yeah, we never adopt it. We just review it. And so at this time, we are at the point to take action for this resolution to continue hosting our meetings via Zoom due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
I'll move that.
Thank you. Second.
I'll second. Oh, go ahead, Ivy.
Awesome. Thank you. So we can go down the roll for the vote. So this has been first. This has been moved by Bill Riley, seconded by Ivy Rose. So Jorge Velasco.
Yes.
Napoleon?
Yes.
Thank you. Tassian Kwamlele, yes. Bill Riley?
Yes.
Abby Rose?
Yes.
Thank you. So moved. So we can continue hosting our meeting via teleconference due to the Planning Commission, due to this pandemic. And now we'll move on to the second item on our agenda, which is approval of the prior meeting minutes from October 13th, 2021. These were previously sent out to us, but I'll give everyone just a minute to just review them again. If there are any to see if there are any questions or any amendments that need to be made. And if not, then I will look for someone to make a motion for us to accept the minutes as presented. All right, so can I get a motion for approval?
Yeah, this is Bill Riley. I'll move approval of item number 4.
Thank you. I need a second.
This is Jorge. I second it.
Thank you. So I'll call for the vote. Pacolia?
Yes.
Jorge?
Yes.
Bill. Mr. Riley.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I apologize.
yes, for myself. And then Avi.
I would say yes, but I wasn't on the council then, so I'm not sure about.
You can abstain.
I think I should probably abstain.
Okay, got it. Totally understandable. So that moves forward with 4 yes votes and 1 abstention. So thank you. And now we will move to the next item on our agenda, which I believe is an action item. And this will be approval of the OFCY independent FY 20 to 21 evaluation report presented by SPR Associates. So I will turn that over. I believe this is Mika. You will be presenting to us. Awesome. So the floor is yours.
And I'll just do a quick introduction to this before you start, Mika. This is an annual requirement. This is part of the guiding legislation that enabled OFCY, is that there's an annual independent evaluation report that's produced with the Planning Oversight Committee's direction, and that this report is then adopted by City Council. We brought this report to you back in October to the subcommittee and then to the full POC at the meeting in December. We didn't have a quorum in December, so Mika is coming back now that we have a quorum, so you could have opportunities to ask questions about the presentation with her, and that hopefully we'll have quorum to adopt this and move it to City Council looking for their approval on March 1st. Yeah.
All right, thanks. Thanks for having us again. For those of you who don't know us, I work for Social Policy Research Associates, and we're an Oakland-based evaluation research firm, and we've had the pleasure of working with OFCY for the last 7 years. And I'm happy today to be presenting the results from last year's evaluation. And if you have any questions, please feel free to just chime in as we go. You can either put something in the chat or you can just speak up. Okay. So first I wanted to give a very quick overview of the report. So as in previous years, the final report has a section for OFCY-wide findings, and that's the main report. So that's looking at all strategies and all programs. Then we have section B, which is the strategy level summary for each of the 9 strategies, followed by a program profile for each program. And that shows enrollment, attendance, and survey results for each individual program. So this allows us to see what is going on and who is being served at 3 different levels, at the overall fund level, within each of the 9 strategies, and then within each of the 149 funded programs. Okay, and just wanted to go over some of the data that we use to inform the report. So we have administrative records. Programs track demographics and attendance for their participants in OFCY's client management system, which is CitySpan. And last year there were 17,502 participants. And we collected participant surveys from 5,147 youth, 690 parents and caregivers who were enrolled in early childhood programs, and 101 educators who are in the programs that receive mental health consultation. And they completed their surveys to share their perspectives on program quality and participant outcomes. In addition, we had staff from 131 programs complete an online survey about program characteristics, staffing, and their partnerships. We also had the pleasure of interviewing program managers and directors from 11 programs, and we held focus groups with youth and adult participants from 5 programs last year. Okay, and so diving into the actual report, on page 3, we have an overview of the funded strategies. So this grant cycle, there are 9 separate strategies that fall under the areas of either early childhood, student success, positive youth development, or transitions to adulthood. And now I want to focus on the children, youth, and families who were served by the OFCY programs. And you can find this information on pages 4 to 6 of the report. So as I mentioned before, there were over 15,000 children and youth who participated in OFCY-funded programs. And in light of OFCY's commitment to racial equity, the data shows that programs are serving OFCY's target population of children and youth who identify as African American or Black, Latinx, and Asian Pacific Islander. And this number doesn't include the preschoolers who attended child development centers and Head Starts that benefited from the support of mental health consultations. It also doesn't include all of the young children who may not have attended early childhood programs, but benefited indirectly from their parents' attendance in programs. And then programs in the parent engagement and support and the Family Resource Center strategies, those are 2 of the early childhood strategies, they also served over 2,000 parents and caregivers. And comparing the demographics of the city of Oakland to the children and youth enrolled in OFCY programs. We found the OFCY program served about 20% of Oakland's Black and Latinx children and youth, and about 14% of the city's Asian and Pacific Islander children and youth. And looking more closely at race and ethnicity across different age groups, we found that participation rates varied across age and race. So in this chart, the more vibrantly pink shades represent a higher proportion of children and youth being served. So as you can see, Latinx children were more represented among children 0 to 12 than they were among youth 13 and up. And in comparison, African-American, Black youth, and Asian Pacific Islander participants comprised a higher proportion of children and youth over 5 years old than younger children. So this kind of mirrors the larger city demographic trends, which is showing a growing Latinx population among the younger children in the city. The report shows other demographic information, including age, gender, and zip code of residence. And we were also able to investigate sexual orientation using the youth survey. And through that survey, we found that 9% of students in grade 6 and up who submitted the survey identified as LGBTQ. So that's 377 young people served by 52 different programs. And this is an increase over previous years. So we have adopted the city's results-based accountability framework for this evaluation. So our aim is to investigate first, how much did programs accomplish, which we answer with enrollment and attendance data. How well did they do it, which we answer by looking at if programs accomplished what they had projected that they would do, and crucially, considering participant feedback to assess program quality. And then finally, we ask, is anyone better off? Which we assess mostly through self-reported outcomes from participant surveys and also looking at other data points like youth employment in the career awareness strategy. So those are our three guiding questions for the evaluation. On page 2 in the executive summary, you'll see this table of RBA metrics. I know you can't really see it on this slide. I just wanted to give a little visual of what it looks like. So these RBA metrics, as well as the report itself, is broken up into those three guiding questions that I just discussed. So we have a section of indicators for how much did OFCY programs do, how well did they do it, and then at the bottom, is anyone better off? And now we will turn to that first question, how much did programs do, which we start covering on page 8 of the report. So programs did a lot over the last fiscal year, particularly given the challenges posed by the pandemic. We did see a drop in child and youth enrollment over the previous years, most likely due to the effects of the pandemic. And through interviews and also revising quarterly reports submitted by programs, we learned that enrolling children and youth in virtual services was challenging for many programs. Also, many young people were experiencing Zoom fatigue. And then many of the recruitment practices that programs generally rely on include things like in-person events and schools, and those just weren't feasible last year. Still, some programs were actually able to enroll more students than they had previously because of the virtual format. They found that it was actually easier to get children and youth to attend. We did see that summer programming, comprehensive after school, and youth development and leadership strategies were the ones that experienced the largest drop in enrollment. We also saw that Black and Asian children and youth comprised a somewhat smaller proportion of OFCY participants than they did in the previous year, but that did vary somewhat by strategy. So there was a lower proportion of Black children and youth in career awareness, youth development and leadership, comprehensive after school, engagement and success for elementary and middle school students, and then parent engagement and success. However, Black children and youth actually made up a higher proportion of participants in the high school and post-secondary student success strategy and among the summer programs compared to last year. So moving on to our second question, how much did programs accomplish last year? And there's a lot for programs to be proud of here. Because after school, I just want to point out that because after school programs tracked attendance differently than in previous years, we didn't include the attendance for that strategy in this analysis. But excluding comprehensive after school programs, OSOI programs provided over 1 million hours of enriching experiences for young people, experiences that they might not otherwise have had access to. And on average, youth received about 100 hours of service. And because OFCY is designed to serve a very diverse group of children and youth who have different needs, different desires, different interests, the amount of time that participants engaged in programs varied. But as shown here, half of participants, so that's over 10,000 young people, spent at least 120 hours in program. And there was some variation in the amount of time that children and youth spent in programming. So Asian Pacific Islander youth, multiracial and biracial youth, and African American Black youth spent more time in programming than the average participant. And some of this difference may be related to the age of participants. So for example, Middle Eastern North African participants were most likely to participate in early childhood programs, where average service hours tend to be lower just because of the nature of the types of programs that they offer. Are there any questions before we move on? Okay, so how well do programs do it? First, we look at how close programs came to meeting projections. So at the end of the year, they project how many hours of service they're going to provide and how many children, youth, and or parents they're going to serve. And as shown here, on average, programs did meet their projected enrollment and attendance hours. And now looking at what is for us, one of the more meaningful parts of the evaluation, we looked at participant feedback. We looked at a few key components of program quality. These are things that research has shown are associated with strong positive youth development outcomes in out-of-school programming. So these areas include things like creating a safe environment, having activities that youth find to be interesting and engaging, and fostering connections between participants and caring adults. So again, these are things that research shows are critical for supporting positive youth outcomes in these types of programs. As you can see on this slide, youth rated programs strongly in each of these areas. 92% of youth, for example, agree that they felt safe in their program. I also want to just point out that there is a not sure option on the survey. So this doesn't necessarily mean that 8% of participants disagree that they felt safe in the program. So some of them might have marked not sure. So this only includes those who either marked agreed or strongly agreed. Okay, and then turning to our third and probably most important question, is anyone better off? So many of you may remember working with us, we've worked with programs to identify 2 to 3 outcomes for each strategy that are the most important goals for programs. So these are outcomes that we know can set a young person up for success. The early childhood strategies focus on adult level outcomes, including connections to resources, parental confidence, and knowledge of child development, because these are outcome areas that we know help adults best care for the children in their charge. For the child and youth serving strategies, we focus on 2 to 3 outcomes for each strategy that are related to either academics, youth development, or career awareness. Now, these are the primary outcome measures that we look at for the RBA, but our survey does include a lot of other questions tied to a number of relevant outcomes. For youth development and then strategy specific goals. So before we go into the results for this final RBA question, I wanna take a moment to tease out why these survey questions and other RBA indicators are important in showing outcomes. So on the left side of this slide, we have a list of the city's RBA goals. Now, going back to those goals I was showing you before, here we have an example of some of the data points that we use to assess progress toward the city's main goals. So for example, are older youth more connected to school or work? Here we see that OFCY programs placed 1,496 youth in an internship or job placement last year. And we found that 86% of youth in the high school and post-secondary success programs agreed that their programs helped them feel more confident about going to college. On page 7 of the report, we have some other sample data points for each of these city goals. And this is how we assess if programs are contributing to the city's RBA goals. And here we have just a few examples of the key outcomes that we looked at this year. We found that 94% of youth in career awareness and employment support programs agreed that they learned about jobs that they can have in the future at their program. And 84% of youth in strategies with an academic focus reported that they learned skills that help with their schoolwork because of their program. So we also wanted to know if youth of different ages or identities have different experience in programs, or if there are different outcomes for different groups of children and youth. So looking into that, we found that older youth reported the strongest outcomes in several youth development outcomes that we investigated, such as decision-making and goal setting, development and mastery of skills, confidence, and sense of belonging. And when I say older youth, we were looking at 10th grade and above, compared to younger students. We also found that African-American Black children and youth were most likely to agree that an adult their program cared about them, and other similar questions that were related to building positive connections to adults. We found that Asian Pacific Islander youth were most likely to agree with questions related to improved development and mastery of skills. And we found that Latinx youth were most likely to agree with questions related to improved decision-making. As I mentioned previously, about 9% of youth who submitted the survey in grade 6 and up identified as LGBTQ. And we found that these youth reported similarly strong outcomes and assessments of program quality. So they're feeling just as safe in programs, just as engaged in programming as other youth. Okay, so that concludes our overview of this first section of the report, where we're looking at all 9 strategies and all 149 programs. Now we'll turn to the second section of the report, which is the strategy level summaries.
Mika, before we go to the second section, I just want to open it up and just make sure, the committee members have any questions related to what was just reported?
Thank you.
They're silent, so let's move forward.
This is Jorge. One really brief question. So going back to Mika, you mentioned that 92% of the participants reported feeling safe and that there was a not sure option. When these surveys are being, when you're gathering the data, do participants, like, for example, if they don't understand something or don't know how to answer, or like in the instance of if you feel safe or not, can put not sure. If they have questions about some of the survey data questions, are you able to guide sort of where, help them answer or clarify if they need any clarifying questions?
So we are not, the surveys are administered by the programs themselves. I know that some of the programs do review the questions in advance with the survey respondents. These are also field tested questions. So we pulled them from surveys that have gone through a lot of testing to make sure that they're appropriate for the age groups that we're working with.
Right. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you, I appreciate it.
Okay, great. Okay, so this is just an example of some of the RBA results for the Career Awareness and Employment Support Strategy. So as I mentioned, we have a section for each of the 9 strategies in the report. We're just going to go over one of them here just to give you a taste of what we're reporting on. So it's a lot of the same data points that we looked at in the OFCY-wide report. We're looking at how many children and youth were served, the hours that they participated. We're also looking at their survey results. So, and in terms of both program quality and then also student outcomes. For the career awareness and employment support, we're also looking at the wages and stipends that youth earned while they were in these programs, and then the percentage of youth who were placed in an internship or a job. And for each strategy, we also have an RBA report that goes over all of the different individual RBA indicators that we look at. And then I just wanted to touch a little bit on some of the youth who are participating, some of their self-reported outcomes. So again, 94% of youth in programs agreed that they learned about jobs they can have in the future. And in the strategy report, we also talk a lot about what we learned from staff and participants. And I just have a quote here that I felt summarized pretty well some of the work that was going on last year. So because of COVID-19, we changed our hiring fairs to virtual career explorations or demonstrations, and it was very engaging. The hands-on approach that we tried to capture, even during COVID, it's extra work, but it's worth it, and it really keeps them coming back. That was from the Havens Court Youth Job Initiative. And then finally, in the last section, we have the program profiles. This is where leaders can learn about the accomplishments of each individual program, as well as the demographics and attendance patterns of their participants. And here, I'll just give some little screenshots of what the program profiles look like. So the first page of the profile is also structured around those 3 RBA questions that we've been talking about a lot tonight. So we can see data for each program on each of these measures. And that's what we have here on the first page. On the second page, we have the demographics and a little bit about the attendance of participants. And then on the third and fourth page, on the third and fourth page, we have their survey results, and it's a pretty detailed breakdown where we show the results for each question. And on the left side, we have that individual program, and then on the right side, we have the strategy, so that programs can kind of see where they fit in their strategy and do a little comparison that way. And then in conclusion, we did share some overall takeaways from the report. So we really commend programs for the creativity and just how adaptable they were and how they shifted to a virtual enrichment, how they modified their internships and their job placements to still ensure that youth were getting engaging and enriching experiences, and how they identified ways for safe social interaction, which so many children and youth were in need of last year. As we already mentioned, through our surveys, youth expressed their appreciation for the time to engage with their peers, the support they received from staff, and the break in all the monotony of sheltering in place. For the summer strategy, we did have some open-ended questions where youth were able to provide some of that feedback. In that survey for the summer programs, they also expressed a desire for more one-on-one meetings or informal check-ins between staff and participants and a wider range of activity or internship choices. And again, that's just for the summer programs. That was the only strategy that we were able to do open-ended questions. And that's it. Are there any questions?
Just a quick one. I might have missed this. That detailed program profile, are those for every program? Or is it just like for selected areas of programs?
It's for every program.
Wow.
Yeah, we do one for every program, and they're sorted by the strategy that they're in.
And so for the POC posting, we didn't include all the 148 program profiles. We only included them as an example, but it is on the website as well for under the OFCY.org under evaluation. So it's available to the public to look at the, we can have the one main report, the nine strategy specific reports, and then 149 program profiles if you want to get to that level.
That's impressive.
We need to print up some hard copies and distribute them. Usually when we do so, you'll be getting a nice thick book to peruse.
Well, this was great. Any other comments from members? I would just like to say the report was good, and for me, it just further emphasizes the importance of the strategic plan that we have put in place for the next 3 years. That's even more targeted to address those areas that are more vulnerable. But I do thank you for also acknowledging and recognizing the fact that it is reflective of our current city demographics, which is shifting. And so that there has to be more work done to target those communities with less access, but have some of the higher rates of, you know, of disenfranchisement. So if there are no other questions, comments, or concerns, we will look to take action and accept the report.
I have one quick comment, and then we should open it to the public for feedback for our vote. I just want to thank Mika and the SPR team, because she mentioned how programs have creativity and adaptability during this time. The same goes for SPR and the work that they had to do to pull this together during the COVID crisis. They've definitely worked to try to reflect the direction of the POC. And I just want to say I really appreciate the work that you have done, Mika, on this to bring the results-based accountability framework within your evaluation design. And I also want to thank Pecolia and Jorge, who are members of the Planning Oversight Committee's Evaluation Subcommittee, and their work they've done to provide some feedback and direction to Mika to help hone and improve upon the presentation for that's here for tonight.
I second that.
Yes, I third that. I don't even know if that's a real thing. So we will open it up for public comment from members of the public before we begin to take a vote. And I do see Ms. Asada Olubala, and you will have 2 minutes for your comment.
2 minutes is not gonna do it, but I'm gonna respect the process. It is unacceptable to say that we're using surveys and interviews of the children and the parents to validate the programs. Worth unacceptable. So just to give you an example, how did they do it? How did they do it? How did they do it by hours of attendance? You know what I would want? How did they do it? Did they use instructions? Was technology used? Did we have things like resources used and identified? Were there real world experiences? Were there accommodation for special needs students? Was tutoring a part of anything? Did they have field trips, guest speakers? Did they engage in research projects, role playing? Okay. But to say hours of attendance to evaluate a program and a survey of the students, I want to know, were cognitive skills developed? Were non-cognitive skills developed? What were they? I want to know, did we do any diagnostic testing? You know, this is totally unacceptable. To say surveys of the children, hours of attendance, when will they serve, and that determines the value of the program. I'm a teacher, taught for 31 years. It's okay to survey the kids and the young people. It's okay to interview the parents, but that should not be the final determinant of spending of $18 million. How much of that $18 million went to administrative costs? I want some specifics, non-cognitive skills. Did they gain motivation? Did they gain confidence? Did they gain resilience? I can't go in this direction of giving praise to this. And I see it over and over again every year, and not just this department, but throughout the city and district. We don't have a true way of evaluating and assessing how we're spending money on our children. That's why our children are not getting anywhere. That's why we have kids who are so behind. But yeah, y'all gonna go ahead on and say this is great. Don't agree with it. Not at all. Thank you for the time.
Thank you so much for your comments, Ms. Olivala. Now, unless there are any other hands raised for comment, which I do not see, then I do. I am going to totally pronounce this wrong, but Mr. Bone Kumnuan, I'm so sorry, but you have 2 minutes to speak.
Okay. Hi, my name is Bone with the East Bay Consortium, and this is the first time we were grantee of the OFCY, and I really want to appreciate that we got awarded. And I really want to appreciate that OFCY actually do the survey. This is the first time we actually used that to make our program better. And every single year we look at a survey, what kind of student needs. And to comment on the last speakers, depending on the program, we do all those for the students. We have guest speakers coming in to take them to career. We do like a lot of research stuff. They learn about college, they do everything. So it's all depending on, I know that in terms of like number of hours of attendance, but you're right, it's never a breaking down of like, what did the student do, right? For us, it's always academic support. We focus on math, we focus on STEM, but we also have a career component to it as well. And as well as the college readiness program in the afternoon. So definitely, I think, we always encourage the members to come visit our summer program when it's even virtually or as well as in person. And I remember the first year when we were granted, a POC member came and visit. He was pretty impressed with the amount of students and focus that they have. It was at Merritt College, and just want to point out that the researcher survey is actually doing us as a program, as a new grantee. Definitely, we just realized that, for example, the first year I was looking at it, I noticed that one thing was I was surprised that there was low percent of students that they feel like they don't have a caring adult on that thing, because, you know, like when we did it virtually, and that was our main focus this coming past summer, is like, how can we interact with students virtually? Because our summer program was delivered through Zoom, and I'll be interested to know what is that result going to be. Because when we were in person, the teachers got interact with students at break time, lunchtime, field trips, you know, different things. But we did virtually, it's a little different. So definitely, I just wanted to, thank you for doing the survey and to really, to learn about our program and what we can do to improve as a program. So we've been doing for the past 30 years of the same thing. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your comments. Let's see if there are any other hands raised, which I do not see. So at this time, again, I want to open it up to the committee members to see if anyone has any comments. And if not, then someone can make a motion for us to accept the report as presented.
This is Jorge. I make a motion to accept the report.
Thank you, Jorge. Do I have a second?
This is Bacolia, I second.
Awesome, we'll call for the votes. Bacolia.
yes.
Jorge?
Yes.
Mr. Riley? Mr. Riley? You're muted.
Yes, that follows it, yes.
Okay. And Avi?
Challenge, very much challenge.
Yes.
Awesome, thank you. So that has passed unanimously, and we will move to now, I believe, the fifth item on our agenda, which is, I mean, it's actually the sixth item of our agenda, update on the OFCBI release of a request for proposals for FY 2022 to 2025. And I believe I'll be turning this over to Mike.
Yes. I'll do a quick update. I'm going to pass it off to my colleague, Scott Kim. And I'll just do a quick introduction is that OFCY does an RFP once every 3 years. The RFP is the vehicle to implement the strategic investment plan that was developed last year. So the strategic investment plan was approved and adopted by City Council in December. As staff, we developed a request for proposal process to implement it, and we released it on the 10th of January, and proposals will be due February 22nd. This is a very big process. It does lead to the selection of new grant awards for the next three-year cycle, starting fiscal year 2022-2023. So new programs starting in the summer 2022. Grants are for 1 year and eligible for renewals in years 2 and 3 based on satisfactory performance. That Scott has more details and will provide an update.
Caitlin, do you have the two slides by any chance?
Yes, I do.
All right.
One moment.
So I will be providing a very brief two-slide update on the fiscal year 22-25 request for proposals. As Mike said, it was released 9 days ago on Monday, January 10th. And earlier today, we hosted our one and only bidders conference. We invited the Department of Workplace and Employment Standards to present all the things about contracting with the city, as well as just required schedules, living wage ordinance, insurance requirements. We also had over 250 attendees. So it felt large, it felt very large as we were going through the meeting. The meeting was recorded and will be placed on the OFCY RFP webpage, along with the questions and answers that were asked and responded to, and some we didn't get to in the actual webinar, but we will respond to them in writing, and they will be posted for everyone to see. We're hosting two more technical assistance workshops on how to apply online through our CitySpan system. That's coming up on January 27th,
I think,
and February 3rd. We're also working on a grant writing workshop to be planned for early February. So when we solidify that, we'll let people know on our, once again, OFCY RFP webpage, as well as the login page for the CitySpan application system. Next slide. So this is just the general RFP timeline. It has some things that I've already mentioned, like our pre-proposal meeting that occurred earlier this morning, the two TA workshops. We are also providing email technical assistance through February 4th. And then the proposals are due by Tuesday, February 22nd, because Monday is President's Day holiday. And then we have an extensive review process, and this is where some of you come into play as part of the review subcommittee, as well as the overall POC, because we're hoping in April to have a funding recommendation made by the POC. And ultimately, it has to get approved by City Council. And then we begin contracting and negotiations in June with new programs to begin this new 3-year grant cycle on a 1-year contract from July 1 to June 30th, 2023. And for summer programs and the funded under the summer strategy, as well as for the Oakland Summer Youth Employment Programs, their expected start date would be June 1st, 2022. So, is there any questions or comments?
No, I'll first quickly say that I know we did a very long presentation at your meeting in December on the RFP, so this is a much shorter update. I think Scott and I have been kind of immersed in this RFP very deeply for the last 2 months, so we might take granted what questions need to be asked or what we should be presenting, but this was more of an opportunity for the POC and for the public to ask questions, and hopefully we could give good responses. One thing I do want to note too is that this application is all online. We do it through our online CitySpan custom data management system. So proposals in the review process will be through online. We do not take hard copies. So when the deadline comes from February 22nd, 5 p.m., the system will shut down. We don't take any proposals even 1 minute after the deadline. So I encourage everyone in the public as well to start early and don't wait to the last minute for the proposal deadline. Yeah. Avi, question?
Could you maybe just say a few words about how the POC is involved in a proposal review process?
Yes. So the first step is in the proposal review, staff receives the proposals and makes sure all the elements are completed, that we received everything accurately and that's needed. The next step is that the proposals are read by reviewers and inside and outside the city to get a ranking based on the 100-point scale that's provided within the RFP. We take an average of the scores and move the proposals by funding strategy, so the groups in the like-minded funding strategies, next to a POC review subcommittee. And that's what we'd be looking to have formed for the proposal review. Most likely will be April at this point. The reader review will be in March, and then the proposal review for the POC with the ad hoc committee will be in April. And we look at the review committee would be able to review the proposals, the demographics proposed, the location of services, and the alignment of the proposals to the strategy, as well as to look at the equity considerations that are in the strategic investment plan and the RFP, to prioritize support for African-American children and youth and Latinx children and youth, as well as other priority populations that are identified in the strategic investment plan and the RFP, as well as to look at considerations such as geography and location of services. And so the review committee is very critical in helping to select by strategy area the ultimate recommendation for funding. The review committee then will take the recommendations and bring it to the full POC for their consideration and approval in April. Once the POC adopts or approves the funding recommendation, we send out notification to all applicants and that if they've been recommended or not. If applicants are not recommended, they are able to submit an appeal. And at that time, we would ask the POC to also form an ad hoc appeals subcommittee to review those appeals and see if they have validity. Once that's complete, if the POC has agreement on the funding package, we bring the full funding package to City Council for their adoption. City Council should be adopting it as a whole package. They're not supposed to line item the selections, but they are delegating that choice to, that is why the Planning Oversight Committee is in their role, is to make those decisions. So it does get very active in April.
Yep. Thanks.
Are there any other questions from the Planning Oversight Committee on just the request for proposal and the timeline?
I would assume, given the turnout, that we're probably going to be getting there'll be a large application pool that'll come in, but will we be sending out any additional announcements about the pending deadline?
Yeah, we'll send out additional announcements to our distribution group. We've also sent it to our partners in the city, like the Department of Violence Prevention, the Workforce Development Board, to send to their lists to get the word out. We do expect a lot of applications received. Scott and I have worked on this for a couple cycles now. The last two cycles, we've averaged about 250 proposals received, and ultimately funding was recommended for about 150 of those proposals.
Okay. And then just given, oh, sorry, Bill.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, and just given the turnout from the bidders conference, would you go out and consider hosting another one before the February 22nd deadline? Or will it just be the one?
It will just be the one. We're looking to keep it that our communication was consistent. So what we're doing is posting a recording of the bidders conference to our website.
Got it.
As well as a copy of the presentation, the PowerPoint that was shared, and posting all the questions and answers that we were able to, that we received and are able to answer. We did do a lot of work also, I'd say, in November and December to try to get the word out sooner before the release of the RFP. We held a couple focus groups with smaller grassroots agencies to help spread the word and also get feedback of how we can make the process more accommodating for newer groups. We hosted a couple workshops with the Department of Workplace Employment Standards on how to contract with the city to give agencies a head start on the work that's needed to register with the city of Oakland as a small local business. And I do think those efforts showed up in the bidders conference. Scott said we had about 250 individuals and they were representing, how many agencies was that? Approximately?
About 160 organizations.
160 organizations. Well, FCY currently supports about 75 different agencies. So that is a large pool of interest from there.
Yeah, this is Bill Ryan. I had a brief question on the program year and when contracts begin. So I see where it says July 1st. That's when the funding starts?
Yes.
So then it says somewhat here, June for summer programs. How's that work? Is it an overlap or?
We work to get approval for the summer programs. We have the one strategy that's summer programming. And then there's the sub-strategy to do summer youth employment. And we do look to get council approval to start June 1st on those ones. And it's our way of being able to get into contract with those providers because we know that they get up and running really quick as soon as school gets out at the end of May to engage the children and youth.
All right, thank you.
Okay, I do see that we have a hand up for questions. Ms. Olubala, again, 2 minutes.
I noticed in the document tonight that you identified some challenges, and one of them was recruiting and retaining staff. particularly males and multilingual candidates. So are you pursuing in your proposal for contracting that this challenge will be addressed? And another challenge you had was over half of the program's staff, only half of the staff was available throughout the year. So it's a staffing issue. So the bottom line is the challenges, other than what I just identified, of what you need to have in terms of future contracts issues, are you addressing that? The other thing is training and professional development requirements for certification, if any, on certain aspects of what you want. Do you have the need to have credentials? Lastly, there has been equity. What is the equity method so that you have a balance of representation of people, particularly by race, represented in the contracting process? And I hope there will be an end to what is going on throughout this, the city of Oakland, that certain nonprofits continue to get contracts over and over again. And the Unity Council, the Lau family, Centro de la Rasta, that's just some of them, just about every year, several times a year, they get contracts. Thank you for the time.
Thank you for your comments. I don't know, Mike, if there are any direct questions that we can
answer. Through the chair, I could attempt to just broadly talk about the proposal process. It is an online application, and there are some sections for everyone to complete universally. The scoring is based on, I'm toggling between my RFP right now, so excuse me. The proposal, we will be asking questions in five main sections. So agency history and capacity, to get a sense of who is the agency delivering the services, what's their connection to the community, what's their experience providing the services, and who are they led by, looking to know what the leadership is in the agency. This next section will be population and geography, where we look to ask information and receive information on who will be served by the program, what's the target population, what's the experience of the applicant working with the population, and what's their plan to recruit and engage and retain participants, as well as where are the services to be delivered, and what's the agency's familiarity and connection to the community. The third section is program design, where we look to receive information on, you know, the services proposed, types of services. Will they be academic services? Will they be one-on-one mentoring services, employment services? Recognizing OFCY supports a wide array of different program models. And this would be where the programs are able to discuss what their program partners look like, what the successful completion of the program looks like, and what they propose to do. The fourth section is a staffing experience and qualifications, where we'd look to get information on who would be the direct service staff. What are they engaged already with the program, or is it roles to be hired? How are the staff qualified, whether knowledge, skills, and abilities to do the work? Are they, if they're required to be credentialed for certain ones, that they are credentialed. Not every program, of course, requires that, depending on the role of the services. But that would be where you'd receive information on, again, the staff, their qualifications, information on their resume and experience. And then the final section, the fifth one, is the budget section, where we receive information on what specific expenses are requested for OFCY. What are your matching funds that will be brought in to support the program outside of OFCY funds? And how are the funds that you're requesting, how is this reasonable to compare to the level of service you're proposing? So if an agency is proposing to serve 10 youth with very intensive one-on-one mentorship opportunities. How is the program budget reflective of that level of service? I'd say, and to the chair, the conversation around equity, there is, again, within the strategic plan, there is an equity framework, which we've taken pretty much in full and put it into the RFP as well to provide guidance. This is where it is the oversight committee's role, as the reviewers will provide a general ranking and assessment of the proposals, but we look to work with the Planning Oversight Committee in detail to use that equity framework to ensure that the funding is directed to African-American children and youth as the primary intention and prior for the fund, as well as Latinx children and youth, as well as supporting, as we heard through the strategic planning process, the need to support other populations, including Pacific Islander and Native American populations. In addition to supporting vulnerable populations such as LGBTQ children and youth, foster youth, youth experiencing homelessness, commercially sexually exploited children. So that we do look at the review, that the proposals respond to the equity framework as they're applying. We look at the reviewers, take that into consideration as they're scoring. And we ultimately look at the POC to hold that in your heart as you're making the funding decisions.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mike. And our meetings are posted on our site, correct?
Yes.
So I was going to say, it's also, I mean, I know we all don't have a lot of time, but the strategic, the review of the strategic plan in October was very thorough and hit on a lot of the stuff that you discussed. So it kind of gives a lot of insight to what the committee will be looking at as we review the proposals that will come in this RFP cycle. So now at this time, we will move to the final item, which is general announcements and updates. And I think the first one that we didn't do that I probably should have started the meeting off with was acknowledging Mike as our new interim director for OFCY, which we had a round of applause to give because we could definitely give it, Mike, but I also want to leave the floor open for comments from you as well.
Thank you, Tatiana. I was going to say there's two staff transitions, and since we've last met, one of them, our program analyst one, Liston Hulse, who was a former Oakland Teacher of the Year. She has moved on to take an excellent role in San Francisco. So San Francisco's gain is Oakland's loss. And then the other transition is Sandy Taylor, who is the longtime Children and Youth Services Manager, OFCY Director. She did retire in December, and I was a longtime OFCY Planner. I am now in the Acting Manager role for the Children and Youth Services Division. Until the new role is posted, and I think it closes on Friday, and there will be a hiring process for that position.
Awesome, thank you. Well, good luck, Mike, and thank you for your help. Any other announcements?
I would say in general, we are still trying to fill up vacancies on the Planning Oversight Committee. I'm extremely happy that Councilmember Kalb appointed Avi Rose for the vacancy. It was last held by Gerald Williams, who was a former POC chair. We've reached out to every council member in the last week just to let them know again of their vacancies and to assist them if they need assistance in identifying a candidate. We are unique in that we're the one board where council member has direct ability to appoint their representatives, one youth and one adult member. So if you have an opportunity to talk to your council member, you can help also remind them that we're looking to fill this up. It's a 17 member board. We have 9 current members on it, and we would love to have a full active board. The discussions are exciting when it's a full board.
Yes, and just definitely to put emphasis on the young people, the young adult appointees. Like, this is for children and youth, and the best way to know how to serve children and youth is to hear from children and youth. So if we all can, myself included, just put additional pressure on our council members to get a young person appointed to the board. And then once they're appointed and shortened, that they're able to be active.
Mm-hmm. So, say, for the next, just another general announcement. As we talked about, there is a need for the Planning Oversight Committee to form an ad hoc review subcommittee. It is the discretion of the chair. So we've worked with you, Tassian, and Dwayne Davis, our youth co-chair, and selecting members to serve. As a subcommittee of a board of nine, we could only have four members on it. Two of them would be Tassian and Dwayne Davis. And that Tassian and Dwayne would select the other two members to help us go through the process in April, and look to have that done at the next POC meeting. On the schedule right now, the next POC meeting would be February 2nd. And the one following that would be March 2nd. Depending on our schedule here, Tassian, I want to work with you on what the agenda would be for February and determine if it's necessary to hold a meeting or if it might be better to hold one on just March 2nd as we work through this RFP process.
Okay, that makes sense. And I would just say to members, if you know that you have interest in serving on the review committee, just flag it, like send me an email or just flag it for me. And that way you can be considered at the top of the list. And yes, Scott, just give me a call.
Mike, did you want to mention about Kimberly?
Yes, and thank you for the reminder. Kimberly Aceves, who was appointed by Councilmember Kaplan for the at-large seat, she did let us know that she will no longer be continuing on the POC just due to her busy life and many things that she's doing. And I just want to appreciate, even though she's not here, I'll say I want to appreciate what she has done for the last 3+ years. She was a member of the review committee 3 years ago. And I do remember back in the day when we met in person, going through many long nights with many long spreadsheets of data to come to the funding decisions that are the current grantee pool that we have. And so I just want to thank her for her time.
Yes, thank you, Kimberly. Well, there are no other questions, comments, or concerns. We will adjourn now at 7:24.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Have a wonderful night.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you, Avi. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Kayla.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike Munson.